Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And by the way, if there was any lack of clarity over the fact that I was joking, nobody has declared a snow day for tomorrow in any school system. As of right now, all the schools are going to be open tomorrow in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and anywhere else you may be hearing me, as of now. So check your local listings, as they say, tomorrow morning, okay? And also, as a little addendum to that last segment, PF from Bay Ridge wrote on our comments page, as if they were trying to make up for the previous negligence in Bay Ridge, for the past two mornings we have had plows scraping and salting the roads, even though there is no snow on them. Now, with so much focus on Sarah Palin's crosshairs map, including Gabrielle Giffords' congressional district, the former Alaska governor took that page down from the internet over the weekend, but hasn't made any public appearance to respond to the criticism. What she did do yesterday was to send a one-sentence comment to Fox News talk show host Glenn Beck, and I'm going to read this to you right now. She said, "Our children will not have peace if politicos just capitalize on this to succeed in portraying anyone as inciting terror and violence. Our children will not have peace if politicos just capitalize on this to succeed in portraying anyone as inciting terror and violence." And so far, that's been it with respect to her crosshairs map. My next guest is the liberal media and political commentator for The Nation magazine and The Daily Beast, among other publications, Eric Alterman, who in a new book documents many of what he says are Glenn Beck statements that could incite people to violence. It's part of his larger take on current politics in a book called Kabuki Democracy, The System versus Barack Obama. Eric Alterman is also an English and journalism professor at the CUNY Grad School and Brooklyn College and a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Eric, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be back.
You accuse Fox in your book of spreading some genuinely worrisome, potential violence-inducing rhetoric against President Obama, and obviously this is before this weekend's incident. Want to give us an example?
Well, I don't think that a well-adjusted, sane, quote-unquote sane person would run back on Fox and then go out and shoot people up. I think that obviously there are the factors here which look to be clearly mental illness. And I wrote a piece about this, focusing on the issue of alleged anti-Semitism on the Daily Beast this morning. But we don't live in a society of only sane. We live in a society of lots of disturbed people who have access to an amazing amount of firearms. You know, the weapon that this fellow used was a weapon that was originally banned under the Clinton crime bill, a ban that only lasted 10 years. And so when you have all these kinds of hints from people like Glenn Beck, Sarah Palin, and some others, Michelle Bachmann, that would lead people to think that they are talking about violence, even if they're only talking metaphorically. The most worrisome example that I talk about in the book is when Glenn Beck was talking over and over, I don't know exactly how many times, something like 30 times, about the threat to society that was posed by this little liberal foundation called the Tides Foundation. And another disturbed individual, I think his name is Williams, was driving on his way there with a plan to shoot up the people there. And he was pulled over on the way. And both he and his parents credited Mr. Beck with giving him the information he needed to form his political views. And I was very upset, as a lot of people were, with Mr. Beck's comments about George Soros and the dangers, the alleged dangers that he posed, and how some unbalanced individual might interpret those. Mr. Soros has pretty good security. But the fact is that these guys don't take any responsibility for the implications of what they say. And if you look at their exact words, sure, they're not inciting anyone to violence on purpose, but it's very easy to understand how someone who's not entirely rational might read them that way.
So with respect to this Tides Foundation, I'm looking at your book, You're quoting back, informing his audience that it was staffed by, quote, thugs and bullies, committed to, quote, the nasty of the nastiest, like indoctrinating school children and undoubtedly creating a, quote, mass organization to seize power. You quote back, feeling no compunction in terming the president the leader of, quote, an army of thugs, and comparing the country under his presidency to, quote, the damn planet of the apes. Now, do you want to place all of that language beyond the pale? I don't know if you were out there saying that George Bush was running, an administration of thugs or whatever during that time. How much language do you want to put off limits?
Well, I think if I were saying that, you would know it. I think every single liberal commentator who's ever said anything objectionable that has been raised in the past few days. So I think we can assume that I wasn't saying that.
Right, but on the idea of it.
The idea of it is that I think people should be held responsible both for what they say and for what they empower. I think, Mel Gibson has a different reputation in Hollywood today than he did 5 years ago because of the things he's been saying, okay? People don't want to work with him, even though he makes people a lot of money. People he's got to work all by himself if he can work at all because he's been shamed, okay? And yet Rupert Murdoch, who empowers Glenn Beck and some of these other people to say these horrible things, is considered a very respectable person. Joel Klein is proud to leave the New York City school system and go to work for Rupert Murdoch. He said it at all these events and so forth. And in fact, he defended Beck's comments both about Soros and about the president. So I think that our society has to take the issue of shaming more seriously. It's an old Jewish notion. I'm not for any laws that keep people from saying what they believe. I think I don't trust anyone to pass those laws. But I do think as a society, we can hold the value of civil discourse in high enough regard to decide that we're not going to associate with this kind of thing. And there's no question in my mind that repeatedly Fox News and many of these talk show hosts who have nothing to do with Fox News, but who also set the tone for the debate, like Rush Limbaugh, like Michael Savage, have gone well beyond the pale.
The title of your book is Kabuki Democracy. What do you mean?
What I mean by Kabuki Democracy is that our democracy has become so corrupted that while it looks like a democracy from far away and the motions that people go through are the motions that people would go through if there were a real democracy, as Kabuki theater works, it contains none of the substance. It's kind of a puppet. I could have called it a puppet democracy, but that gives this idea of puppeteering, which I didn't want. So it's sort of a play democracy. It has no substance of democracy, or very little anymore.
So you think that even as president of the United States, the system is stacked against Barack Obama in a way that he can't influence it very much?
Well, I think that the kinds of promises or campaign pledges that Barack Obama made and that people voted for him expecting him to fulfill, particularly with a supermajority in both houses of Congress, are impossible to fulfill in our system right now because of a number of factors, the most important of which is the power of money. I mean, the power of the right-wing media is an important factor of what we've just been talking about because there's so much perversion of the discourse that it makes it hard for the same policy to be discussed. But the more important factor is the power of money.
You're very critical in this book, both of Obama himself and of the American people. You refer a number of times to someone's line about the berserk ignorance of the American people and H.L. Mencken's famous line about never going broke, underestimating the intelligence of the American people. With respect to Barack Obama's supporters themselves, you say we must all shoulder our share of the blame, the essential ingredient missing from Obama's campaign of hope and change, and this is your closing line in the book, that the essential ingredient missing was the hard work that would be necessary from all of us to convert the former into the latter, not only on his part, but on ours as well. You want to talk about that?
I'm going to have to disagree with your characterizations of what I'm saying in that part. I don't think I'm very critical of Barack Obama. I think I'm very sympathetic to Barack Obama. I think he's made a lot of mistakes. I think I would do things differently, assuming that I know what he knows. I mean, maybe he knows things I don't, and therefore he's right and I'm wrong. He's a very smart guy. I'm sure he's smarter than I am. But I think I'm very sympathetic to him, and the book is about the difficulty that the system presents in allowing him to fulfill his campaign pledges. That's the argument. So it comes from a place of sympathy, and I was a very strong Obama supporter, and I still think he's the best person for the job. In those quotes that you read...
And by the way, I think I used a wrong word. I said berserk ignorance. The phrase is invincible ignorance, correct?
Yeah. That's a quote from Paul Krugman, actually.
Uh-huh.
And he's not talking about the American people. He's talking about the Republican Party.
And Philip Roth, who termed what you quoted as the indigenous American berserk.
And that is more of, he's not describing, again, he's not describing the attitudes of the American people. He's describing sort of the angel of history. That's a quote from his book about, what's it called, the one where the Swede, his daughter goes crazy and ends up as a terrorist.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sorry, I don't know.
Anyway, yeah. The one thing I'll cop to in the implication of your question is that the American people are incredibly ignorant, shockingly ignorant, and shamefully ignorant. And so ignorance is easy to manipulate. And this is also history. And that's why I quote Mencken, whose quote is, I think, from the 20s,
mm-hmm.
That nobody ever went broke underestimating. He said the intelligence, but I would say the information level, or whatever I say in the book. And it used to be, and there were pluses and minuses to this, it used to be that we had a class of an elite that helped try to protect Americans from the consequences of their ignorance. Not always, and not always effectively, and often that elite did a lot of bad things, and certainly it looked after its own interests, but they were gatekeepers of a sort. And that gatekeeping function has all but disappeared now, so that we have members of the political class who seek to exploit that ignorance rather than improve it or protect people from it. And that's what's happening, I think, in places like Fox News and talk radio. And far more people get their news from talk radio than get their news from any other source now. It's about 40 million people getting their news from talk radio. And the combined viewership of the ABC, NBC, and CBS Evening News is under 20 million.
So last thing, what, if anything, do you see changing in the second 2 years of the Obama presidency, and how?
Well, I think Obama himself politically is enormously helped by the election of Republican Congress. Because the Republican Congress, and I quote a couple of Republican senators and congressmen in the book, saying that they didn't have to be responsible during the first 2 years because they were out of power and they could say whatever they wanted. And now that the public will be focused on the consequences of their rhetoric, Obama's going to start looking very good, the same way Clinton started looking very good once people saw what Newt Gingrich was really up to. I mean, the Republicans, in the first day of their majorityship, they had to go back on a bunch of their most important promises. So I think that it strengthens Obama, the likelihood that Obama will be reelected, because people will see the difference between a radicalized, irresponsible party and a centrist party, a divided party, one that is not very strong in a lot of ways and has an awful lot of problems that I can be awful critical of. But one of their problems is their desire to be so responsible all the time. From a political standpoint. And once people have experienced what the Republicans, the consequences, my God, if they shut down the government, that'll be the end of them. And if they don't, it'll show them to be hypocrites. And there's any number of issues where that's the case. So I would bet a lot of money on Barack Obama's reelection right now as a result of his having lost the House in this past election.
Eric Alterman, author now of Kabuki Democracy, The System versus Barack Obama. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And to be clear, and this is a correction, Beck and Palin exchanged emails yesterday of which he read portions on the air, but it was not a one-line email. What Beck read on his program was pretty much the portion that I cited. But to be clear and to correct what I said earlier, it was not simply a one-line email statement about the Crosshairs website from Sarah Palin to Glenn Beck. There was more content than that. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a very interesting take on the world today as being in effect in a new Dark Ages, and the author's prescription for moving to a renaissance. Stay with us.